Conference record has joined the conference.
Hey, you there?
Hi, I'm here.
Okay, perfect. All right, so, this is Michelle Musi from Grateful Web, and I am here with Papa Molly, and it is October 2nd, 2014. I'm pretty sure.
Hi, Michelle. Hi, Michelle.
Hey.
How are you doing today?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day here in New Orleans. The weather's
awesome.
Starting to get a little cooler, you know. This is my favorite time of year. This and the spring, early springtime are my favorite times of year in New Orleans.
Because of the cool weather or something else?
Both, really. It's just, you know, it's just kind of like during the summertime, it gets really, really hot here and everything slows down. And now that the weather's kind of cooling off a little bit, people tend to get outdoors more. And there's a bunch of, activity, free concerts in the park, that sort of thing.
Oh, awesome. So do you play any of those free concerts in the park ever?
Yeah, actually, I'm one of the headliners of Crescent City Blues and Barbecue Festival.
Oh, that sounds delicious and amazing.
Yes, indeed. And it's got Los Lobos is also playing on the day that I'm playing, and Walter Wolfman Washington. Two of my favorites, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Cool. So do you play with the musicians ever? Do you have special guests, or do you usually just kind of go up there and do your own thing?
Well, a little bit of both, I guess. New Orleans is the kind of town where people often just drop by and sit in on your gig, or vice versa. I'll drop in and sit in with people. The other night, I sat in with my friend Kevin Russell, who is also known as Shiny Ribs. Fantastic band. One of my favorite new bands. They're not exactly new. Kevin has been around for a long time. He was a member of a band called The Gourds. And now he's got this new project called Shiny Ribs, which is his nickname. But it's a fantastic band. Really, really great. I encourage everybody to check them out.
Awesome. Music recommendation right off the bat. I like that. So speaking of New Orleans musicians, when I was kind of like researching you and your music and stuff, I found that video of Honeybee with Henry Butler.
Yeah. One of my
favorites. Yeah, he's awesome. How long have you known him, or, you know, how did you come to meet him?
I guess he and I have known each other about a little over 10 years now. It was about 11 years ago or so that I went into a club here in New Orleans called the Mermaid Lounge where he was playing, and he had heard my album and invited me to sit in with him. And then we talked that night about getting together and doing some recording, and eventually we formed a band called the Rhythm Council, which toured on the festival circuit for a couple of years, but we haven't been very active lately. But you never know, we might fire that back up one of these days.
Yeah. So I feel like New Orleans has like a really special thing about music. There's just like really interesting, awesome music that comes out of there. And I think that there's like a special feeling to a lot of the songs that people create in New Orleans. Do you think that's true?
Oh, absolutely.
Why do you think that is?
I think, for one thing, New Orleans is the birthplace of a lot of American music. Starting, you know, around in the late 1800s, I think it's just the right time and place and circumstance for everything to happen, because you had this huge influence of, people from Africa, you had this European influence, and it all kind of came together in the right way, jazz was born, the blues, from that, rhythm and blues, rock and roll, funk, it all has roots here in New Orleans. All of, you know, and that with those elements alone, that just, you know, that just, you can trace just about any type of popular music back to some element of New Orleans.
Hmm. Okay. Because, you know, I noticed, like, in the Appalachians, there's also sort of that combination of, like, African music and, like, European music. And I think that's really interesting how in the Appalachians it's kind of more of a bluegrass feeling, and in New Orleans it's more of, like, a jazz, like, kind of gothic feeling. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, the Appalachians, you know, I mean, that so much of their music is based on banjo, and a banjo is actually an African instrument in
mm-hmm.
origin, you know. And and of course, you know, a lot of the Appalachian music can trace back to, you know, the British Isles and
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing. So there's it's amazing the way music takes root in different places and finds its own voice. But New Orleans happens so often here, you know, that so much of the roots of American music come from New Orleans. It's really a beautiful thing.
So how did you find your roots in music? You know, what made you say, yes, I want to become a musician and I believe that I can do this?
You know, I have to admit, it's like a lot of people from my generation, it started with just, you know, listening to the radio and seeing people like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones on television. You know, I mean, that kind of made me, just like a lot of kids my age, we saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, and we just went out and bought guitars like the next day, practically, you know. So in my case, I was you know, there were some kids in my neighborhood that had a little band together, and they would let me hang around and watch them, and then started showing me things. So this is when I was really young. I got my first guitar when I was 5 years old. So, it just kind of evolved from there, you know. But it's the way I got into roots music and blues music was just from where I was growing up in Louisiana. You couldn't help but hear that kind of stuff.
Yeah, of course. Do you think that the way that people sort of become interested in music has changed now, like in a more modern era in these days?
Oh yeah, you know, everything's changed really, you know, and in some ways for the better, in some ways not, some ways for the worse. But, you know, with the internet and, everybody to hear music instantly, you know, it can be a positive thing because you can check out people's music that you would never hear otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there's so much to wade through, so much different music to, there's so many choices that sometimes it's easy to miss some of the very best things.
Are there any bands that you would... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you could look at it as a positive thing or a negative thing, but I try to look at the positive.
That's a good theory. Are there any bands that you found later in life that you wish that you would have, you know, been able to discover for whatever reason when you were younger? You thought, man, I would have really connected with this when I was younger.
You know, that still happens all the time, believe it or not. I've been a record collector since I was a little boy. I started collecting records about the same time I started playing guitar. And I've got over 4,000 records in my collection. You know, these are vinyl records, 4,000 vinyl records. But I'm constantly discovering stuff that I didn't know about, that I should have known about. You know, it's just amazing how much music's out there and how vast it is. If you just keep your ears open and keep an open mind, you can find all kinds of stuff.
Do you have a most prized record?
Well, I think if I did have to name my most prized record, it would be that I still have the original copy of the very first record I ever bought with my own money. I still have it. And it's
nice.
So it was Surfer Girl by the Beach Boys. And that's my and I still I still love listening to it. You know, I still think it sounds great, and it still reminds me of being that, being like 6 years old and coming home and, you know, playing it in my bedroom. So it, that's probably my most prized record.
That's awesome. So is there a band or a record that you didn't like when you first listened to it, and then you continued to listen to it and it really grew on you and it's kind of become like a big part of your life or anything like that?
Absolutely. And absolutely. Like, my, for instance, my parents used to listen to Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. And to be honest with you, in the 60s, you couldn't turn on the radio without hearing them. They were everywhere. And so I just thought it was this pop square music for my parents, you know what I mean? I didn't want to hear it at all. And now I love it. Now it's like, for the last 15 years or so, I've kind of rediscovered it and just thought, you know, well, I'll check this out. You know, my parents liked it. There must be something good to it. And then I just ended up, you know, now I love it. I love that kind of music. Whereas back when it was going on, like in the late 60s, I was into heavier stuff, you know. I was into like Hendrix and Cream and, some of the Rolling Stones stuff that was like real dirty, and, you know, I loved that kind of stuff. But like my parents, some of the music my parents were listening to was really cool, and I didn't want to hear it because it was my parents' music, you know.
Yeah, totally.
But that was that's an extreme example. There's lots of other things too, you know. There's like, I think that there was a time period where I was kind of I got heavily into jazz when I was in my early 20s, and there was a time where I was kind of, you know, kind of a snob about certain types of rock music that were coming out. And of course, we, you know, some of the best rock music of all time was coming out in the 70s, you know? so I kind of missed it the first time around, and then went back and listened to it, you know? And now I love it. You know, I appreciate it more than ever.
Is there a type of music, like a genre of music, you wish you were better at playing?
Well, there used to be. I mean, I used to feel that way. But I've gotten, I'd say for the last 20 years or so, I've been pretty comfortable in my own style. And once you feel like you've found your own style, then it's not like I don't want to get better as a musician. I'm constantly trying to get better as a musician. But I don't wish that I was different or wish that I was, you know what I mean? It's like, I want to get better at being Papa Molly, you know?
Yeah, you always kind of fit your music into a genre box or anything like that so that it can...
Exactly. I always want to be a better songwriter. I mean, I'm always trying to write a better song. But as far as like, you know, thinking, oh, well, I wish I could play jazz or I wish I could play fiddle or something like that, I don't do that so much anymore, you know?
Yeah. So how do you improve your songwriting? What are some of the methods that you use for that?
Well, I would say that more than anything else, writing songs with Robert Hunter made me a better songwriter, you know?
How come?
Because he's one of the best ever. And
okay.
And, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And so that's like, that basically made me, I realized that I had to elevate my game a little bit.
When did you work with him for the first time?
Well, he and I co-wrote, all but one of the songs on Devin Walker's album, which, you know, that came out like almost 4 years ago. So he and I still are writing together. We still have songs that we have, that we're working on.
Awesome. So since you gave me your opinion of one of the best writers, who do you think is one of the best guitarists around?
Currently, I would have to say, like, right off the top of my head, you know, Derek Trucks. Like,
yeah.
I think he's, like, one of the most amazing guitar players I've ever heard. I think Steve Kimmock is really fantastic. There's lots of others, but those are two of the guys that I'm always really inspired to hear and inspired to work with.
The Tedeschi Trucks band was at Harvest last year. It was really amazing.
They are amazing. They're such a great couple too. They're such nice people, and the whole band is just really great.
Yeah, a lot of really good energy, a lot of different energy on the stage, I think. So it kind of is like having a group of personalities up there. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Harvest for a minute. Have you ever played on Mulberry Mountain?
Oh, yeah, quite a few times.
Okay, that's
what I thought. I played for Wakarusa and for Harvest Festival.
You played with the Seven Walkers a year or two ago, didn't you?
Yes.
On there? On it? Okay, that's what I thought. It's kind of hard to find old lineups for some reason. I don't know why.
I think we were, I think it was 2011, I believe.
Okay. So are there any special guests that we can expect on stage with Harvest this year for your set?
Well, my band is going to be, is going to feature, Reed Mathis on bass, which I'm really excited about. I love Reed Mathis. He's incredible. And of course, he's the original bass player for, Seven Walkers. Before George Porter Jr., joined the band, Reed was the original bass player that plays on most of the album.
Oh, that's awesome. Be like a throwback.
And then on drums, I'm going to have, Doug Belote, who is one of New Orleans' finest drummers and also plays, you know, nationally with a lot of other people too.
Do you play, do you like to play any covers ever?
Oh yeah.
I'd say
my set usually has, you know, anywhere, you know, always at least three or four covers in any Papamala set, you know. And I always try to pick something that's gonna, you know, make people's eyes light up, and, you know, but also I try to pick things that are not overdone either, you know.
Yeah. I assume that probably a lot of your covers are songs that are really important to you. Like, are there a few songs that are just, like, really important to you as, like, a human being or as a musician?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I pick my covers, like, that way. Oftentimes, really, but sometimes I pick them more with a sense of humor, kind of like I want people to realize I'm not taking myself too seriously, you know.
Yeah, totally.
I want everybody to have fun, in other words.
So what do you think is the most fun cover that you've ever learned to play for you?
Well, honestly, ever since Seven Walkers, I love pulling out the Dead covers, you know, because that's just like something everybody knows. And they're so much fun to play, you know. So I had to learn like dozens of Grateful Dead songs when I was playing with Bill. And I still love playing those songs, you know, and I don't like with Seven Walkers it seemed very appropriate to do that because we had an original member of the Grateful Dead in the band with us, you know.
Right, yeah.
With my band, it doesn't seem like it would be appropriate very often, but every once in a while, people love to hear it, so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like the Grateful Dead is often very appropriate.
Oh, I feel like they're, you know, in my world, yes, they definitely are. But, like, I feel like it's, in other words, I think I put that the wrong way. I should say this. After playing those songs with Bill Kreutzmann, it's kind of hard to play them with other people.
Yeah, that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
So did you listen to the Dead a lot when they were, you know, in their heyday?
Totally. I have to make a difference. I have to differentiate though. I didn't ever follow them around. I didn't trade tapes because The truth of the matter is that I was really busy being a musician myself during those days. But but here's what I did. I bought all of their albums. on vinyl, you know, because that was the way we did it back then. You know what I mean? And I did go see them a few times, and I thought they were definitely one of my favorite bands. Like my favorite bands were like, you know, back in those days, my favorite bands were like the Rolling Stones, the Allman Brothers, Bob Dylan, the Band, the Grateful Dead. Not necessarily in that order, but those were like my favorite bands back in those days. You know, those are the guys that I really, you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. That's the stuff I really listen to a lot. And of course, I always listen to lots of blues music and lots of funk music too. But as far as bands go, those were like the big bands of the 70s. Those were my favorites.
So, are there any shows that have happened in the past that you wish that you just like really would have gone to?
Lots of them, you know. I wish I could have been at Watkins Glen, you know, for instance.
Because
that had like three of my favorite bands right there, you know, the Band's, Grateful Dead, and the Allman Brothers, you know. But I've seen those bands at different concerts, but you know, of course, there's so many shows I wish I could have been at.
Yeah, for sure. That was a pretty open-ended question there.
Yeah.
When you were working with Bill Kreutzmann, are there any really awesome things that you learned about the Grateful Dead that you wouldn't have known otherwise, or like, you know, didn't know because you didn't know Bill?
Oh, yeah. Bill and I became very good friends, and he would tell me all kinds of things, you know, about the Dead. You know, some of the things is probably things that I wouldn't share just out of loyalty to his friendship. But a lot of them are things that are public record. It's just hearing it from his point of view was really interesting, you know? I think the one thing that I learned more than anything else is to, like, don't pay attention to the stuff that everybody says about the Grateful Dead on the internet, because to be honest with you, if that's all you knew about the Grateful Dead, you would think that they just hated each other, and that's just not true. They love each other. Those guys, all four of the surviving members of the Grateful Dead, they're like brothers. They love each other, and I've been there when they've been together and seen the brotherly love between them, and I've heard Bobby say it, I've heard Mickey say it. You know, I know there's a lot of love between those guys, and they all still know that they can never go back to those days when Jerry was alive. They all know that.
Oh, you know, yeah.
I mean? Mm-hmm. And yet still they're all musicians, so they have to play. That's what musicians do. We play, you know. But I swear, it drives me crazy sometimes seeing the comments that deadheads make about members of the Grateful Dead. It's like, they've already done such brilliant work. They've influenced all of our lives. They've changed the world. How can you say anything bad about any of them, you know?
Have a little respect.
Yeah, have respect, exactly. They're people. They're just humans, you know? They've done such beautiful, beautiful work, and if you really pay attention, you can see that they're still doing beautiful work.
Yeah.
All of them are. And they really do, you know, this is the thing that, like, I just can't say this enough. I was backstage with Bobby and Mickey and Bill one time, and I just couldn't believe the love in that room, you know. I know that they all feel that way for a Phil, too. And so Phil wasn't there on this one occasion, but they all feel the same way. You know, it's really, there's a lot of love there, and that's something a lot of people just, they're not privileged to see that firsthand, so they speculate about what they read in the paper or whatever, you know, it's just ridiculous.
And then it ends up becoming common knowledge because it's on the internet, and everything on the internet is true.
Right, exactly, you know, so it's just like, I think they all laugh about what people say about them, you know?
Yeah. I guess I'm sure that you kind of have to.
Yeah.
Huh.
You know, and they're humans. They're humans that are, you know, everybody. Think about if you had to age in public. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everybody doesn't have to. Everybody doesn't have to like have their lives scrutinized, and especially once they get, you know, past 60.
Yeah. Just leave them alone.
Right.
So you keep saying, you know, like, they're humans. What does it mean to you to be human?
It means to have faults and to have fears and to have insecurities, but also to have beauty and light and self-worth for who you are, not for your achievements. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's a good answer. So what does it feel like to play your music in front of a really large audience?
Well, tell you, I got a good taste of that just a couple of weeks ago at Law Festival. And it felt wonderful. I gotta say, it felt so good.
Cool. Let's see. Oh, I was gonna ask you. Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say that, you know, for one thing, I love every time I get a chance to play with Billy. I love it. You know, he's my favorite drummer, and he just kind of invented his. You know, some people become good musicians by listening to other people. Bill just kind of developed this unique, original style of drumming by, I don't know, something. It's just like I've never heard anybody play like him before. His style of drumming is like the best I've ever. I mean, there's so many great drummers. I got to play with James Brown's drummer a couple of months ago, and he's amazing too. You know, he kind of invented the funk style of drumming. But the style of drumming that Billy invented, it's very, very free, very liberated. It's like a combination of like the best jazz drummers and the best rock drummers and the best country drummers, and it's something unique and psychedelic and visionary. You know, it's like I don't think anybody has ever played like him before or since, really. So anytime I get a chance to play with Billy Kreutzmann, I think that you know, that in itself is like some of my favorite musical moments. But then getting to walk on stage with him in front of, you know, 50,000-60,000 people, that's even better, you know?
Yeah, that feels good.
Yeah.
Do you get nervous?
I get more nervous when I'm headlining at a club I've never played before, and I'm afraid that there won't be enough people there. That's when I get nervous before a gig. But walking out in front of that people, I feel joy. I don't feel nervous at all. I just feel like excited and happy.
Well, I guess that probably helps the performance a little bit.
Yeah. What makes me nervous is when I'm playing at a club where, you know, where I've never played before, and I don't know if anybody's going to show up or not. That's what makes me nervous.
So, whenever, you know, something like that happens, does it negatively affect your show, or is it just kind of like you end up on stage and you're like, oh, there's not very many people here, you know, something for whatever reason, and then you just sort of take that in and it changes the way that your show happens or anything? Does that happen, or is it just kind of...
No, it doesn't bring me down, if that's what you mean. It's once...
Yeah.
Once I start playing, I'm going to give everything I've got, whether there's 5 people or 5,000, you know? It's just...
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and that's just what... That's, you know, if I can't... If it ever gets to the point where I don't enjoy playing music, or if I feel like it's a job or something, then I'm going to quit. I'm not going to play music anymore if I feel like it's a burden, because it's the most joyful part of my day.
So what are some other non-musical elements that help drive your life?
My wife and my kids and my life here in New Orleans and other people's music and art. And I love to cook. I love to garden, you know. I like to walk out and look at the stars at night and feel the breeze blowing off the river and, you know, just thank those stars that I'm still here to enjoy them. That's where I'm at.
If you had a chance to go to space ever, but you didn't know if you would come back, would you do it?
Yeah.
Cool.
I absolutely would, yeah.
I have never gotten a yes from anybody on that, and I think that is just crazy.
No, are you kidding? Yeah, of course I would. I feel like that's what people do when they explore inner self, their inner set space, you know. I feel like they kind of sometimes they go places and not knowing if they're going to get back, and of course it, you know, when you get back, you're a better person for it. So.
Yeah, that's a good metaphor. I like that. So who's a non-musician who really inspires you?
Dalai Lama?
Who?
The Dalai Lama.
Oh, the Dalai Lama. Okay. Yes. Awesome. I am a Buddhist, so I like that answer.
There's lots more, but he's the first one that came to mind.
Have you ever seen the Dalai Lama in person or anything like that?
Not yet, but I still feel a special connection with him. I'm not sure why, but I just do.
I think a lot of people feel that way. I think that just the goal of the Dalai Lama is so important, and it's such a pure goal. I feel like that it's hard not to connect with him.
Yeah.
So there's a song that I saw on the internet that is on American Horror Story. Sugarland. Obviously, you know which song is on American Horror Story.
Yeah.
Have you gained a bigger fan base since that came out on the show, or anything like that? Do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. There's it's like my website got 40,000 hits the first couple of weeks.
Wow.
after that show, you know, it's like, honestly, and then like since then it's gotten lots more, you know. It's like, it's pretty amazing what something like that can do for at least people being aware of who you are. I won't say that suddenly, you know, I didn't become, it's not like I became famous overnight, but there are a lot of fans of that show, and they do pay attention, and they checked out my music. When they heard that song, they said, "Oh, who's this guy? Let's see what he's all about." And, you know, even if it just means going online and checking out the website or downloading something or listening to you, streaming you on Spotify. That's where I got most of the response, with people streaming it on Pandora and Spotify, that sort of thing.
So do you have your music on all of those sites? Is your music on just like hundreds of different sites like that?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's pretty much standard these days.
I guess. I don't know. I always wonder if musicians, you know, sort of pick and choose which sites that they want to be on because of, I don't know, some reasons. Or if it's just like, okay, yeah, I want my music to be out there, so I'm gonna put it out there on whoever, you know, wants to stream my music.
Well, Nick, I always like to release it officially on iTunes first.
Mm-hmm.
And actually I always try to release, you know, on vinyl too, you know, because vinyl's the one medium where people can't really just like be and share, you know.
Yeah.
But and plus it's my preferred method of listening to music too, so that's why. But I put it out there. It's like if I don't, someone else will. You know, it's like it's on. I'm legally registered with quite a few, like Spotify, Pandora, CD Baby, it's on iTunes, all that. But then there's all these other pirate sites that do it anyway. So once you put music out there, there's really no stopping it. So it's kind of
yeah.
Futile to try, you know?
Yeah. Seems a little counterintuitive to try.
Yes,
stop it.
It is. It is. It's in this day and age, it is. You're right.
So what is one of your biggest remaining goals as a musician?
Well, I would love to be able to, you know, I say this and I know it sounds ridiculous, but the fact that I've gotten to work with as many people as I already have to me is amazing, and I would have never dreamed that I would have been able to work with Robin Hunter or Bill Koitzman or
mm-hmm.
Henry Butler or so many of these people I've gotten to work with. I would have never believed it if you had told me that 20 years ago. So when people ask me that question now, what you just asked me, I always
mm-hmm.
say, you know, like, I would love to work with Bob Dylan. I mean,
wow.
I would love to work with Bob Dylan. I don't expect that it's going to happen, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't.
I guess you may as well just put it out there just in case it gives it a little shove, you know?
Well, it's putting your intentions out into the universe is the first step to making your dreams come true, you know?
I agree. Go ahead.
It may sound far-fetched, and it may sound ambitious, and may even sound egotistical for me to say that, but like I say, crazier things have happened. I never dreamed in a million years that I would get to record. I never dreamed that I would get to record with Willie Nelson. And I got to, I got to record a vocal duet with Willie Nelson. Now, how unbelievable is that for a guy like me? But it happened.
I've always wanted to see Willie Nelson perform. I think he seems like a really awesome human.
He really is. In fact, you know, I feel like he's one of the guys that really inspires me to like want to just keep on like getting better and better, because he just has done that for years and years now, you know.
Mhm. So was your goal as one of your goals as a musician to work with, you know, so many great musicians when you were younger? Did you kind of hope it, even though you maybe didn't believe that would happen, or are there any other really big goals that you had that you've accomplished?
I think that all musicians feel that way. When they're young and as they get older, I think they all feel that way, that like, you know, yeah, of course you want to work with your heroes. Of course they want to get to the level that they're at. But as far as like actually, you know, it's like I think just like I say, you humble yourself before the universe, and yet you say what you want and put your intentions out to the universe. And sometimes
mm-hmm.
sometimes dreams come true like that.
Is there any really good advice that you've received that sticks out in your mind, is like in your time in the music industry, that you've been able to apply to like your daily life?
Yeah, you know, I've gotten all kinds of good advice through the years, but you know, I think some of the best advice that I actually ever got was just from my parents. You know, my parents told me to, you know, have dreams but set goals, and
mm-hmm.
don't settle for less than what you really feel like you deserve. You know, just if you haven't gotten there yet, that's okay, as long as you've tried as hard as you can. But if you haven't gotten there and you haven't tried as hard as you can, that means you just need to try harder, you know?
Yeah. That's good advice. Parents are good at that sometimes.
Yeah.
So have you passed that advice on to your children? How old are your children now?
I have grown children, and yes, I have tried to pass that advice on to them. And then, you know, I might have reworked it just a little bit. In fact, I think I might have said something like, you know, intention is vibration. And,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, my parents didn't use that kind of language so much, but I was like trying to explain to them that everything in this world has a vibration to it, you know, the animals and plants and mm-hmm. everything is basically matter vibrating at a certain frequency, you know, and so that your intention in the world is your vibration. And so your people are going to feel that vibration, you know, other things are going to feel that vibration too. You know, it's like if you walk in the forest and there's animals watching you from in the trees, they're going to figure out whether you're easy prey or whether you are not trying to mess with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people are the same way. And actually, I just feel that way about the entire world and the entire universe. You put your intention out there as a vibration. That's like I'm trying to stay pure. I'm trying to do the right thing. And people will recognize that. And other things will recognize that too. Forces in the universe that we can't explain. You know, so
mm-hmm.
that's how I feel about it. You know, and whether it's true or not, it sure seems true in my life. It seems very relevant in my life. A lot of my dreams have come true.
That's really great. So do you read a lot of like philosophy and stuff like that to help you sort of hone in on your ideas about the world, or are most of your ideas about the world just experiential knowledge?
I'd say both, I guess. I used to read a lot more philosophy when I was younger, and I think it helped shape who I am. But these days, my reading preferences tend to be more towards historical things. I'm just really, I think when I was younger, I wasn't interested in old things as I was in new things. You know,
mm-hmm.
I kind of get, and but now that I'm getting older, I'm getting interested in things that happened before my time, you know. And why? Because you can't really know where you're going unless you know where you're coming from.
Yeah, for sure. So is there anything that you know a lot about that you feel like the world would be really well off knowing a lot about too? Something that, you know, you're like really educated in or that you understand really well.
I I'm a pretty simple person, really. I find joy in just the very basic, simple things like family and nature and,
yeah.
So I can't, don't think I'm really qualified to speak on that grand scale. Yeah. I have my own philosophies, which I've shared with you, but I don't think that they are necessarily the way for everybody. You know,
yeah.
I think it's something that it took me a while to find, and I think everybody's got to find their own way.
Yeah, I suppose that's the cardinal rule of self-discovery.
Yeah, believe me, there's been times in my life when I was really lost, you know, and people that know me and know my history, they know that, and it seems like I've always had good ideas and good philosophy, but putting it into action is something that I think has only come into focus, fairly recently.
Mm-hmm. So I have like a kind of weird question for you. I don't know. I have no idea if you have been asked this question a lot or not at all. So my coworkers and my friends, who don't know like who you are, I mentioned that I was going to be interviewing you and they asked, you know, who it was. And I said, oh, it's Papa Molly. And they all reacted like, oh, like Pop A Molly. Does that happen to you a lot now?
I have been asked this question many times, and here's the answer. It's hilarious because I received that nickname over 30 years ago at a time when nobody was using the expression Molly for ecstasy
yeah.
at all. You know what I mean? Ecstasy was just kind of new on the scene when I got that nickname, and nobody was referring to it as Molly. And not to mention the fact that I wasn't really that interested in that drug and didn't know anything about it. Long after people started calling it Molly, I had no idea. So I would have these kids coming up to me, you know, and going, oh, Papa Molly, I get it. And I'd be going, huh? Get what? I was totally clueless. And finally somebody actually filled me in on what was going on. And I was, at that point, I was like, well, you know, I'm not going to change my name just because people think it's some sort of inside joke or something. So there's the story. And it's, you know, it has absolutely nothing to do with ecstasy or Molly.
Yeah, I figured it didn't. It's like one of those things that happens when the world changes around you,
yeah.
I guess, and your name becomes an inside joke.
I received this nickname from a group of Jamaicans who I was on tour with the Burning Spear Band back in the 80s. And they all had, you know, if you check out reggae music, like almost everybody has a nickname in reggae music. So they decided to give me a nickname because, you know, I was like their friend. I was on the road with them. We were all playing music and touring together, you know. So my real name is Malcolm. They started calling me Molly. And then one day they came to my house and they saw that I had a bunch of children and from that point on, they started calling me Papa Molly. Well, I still wasn't calling myself Papa Molly at that point. They were calling me that. It was kind of a good-natured joke. It was like buddies call each other things for different reasons, whatever, you know what I mean? It didn't really stick. It didn't stick at first. But what happened was that while we were on tour, we kept going and doing these interviews, and they kept introducing me as Papa Molly on, like, to these interviewers, just like they're interviewing me now. They would go and say, you know, there's, you know, here's this guy on guitar and this guy on there, here's Papa Molly, you know. And so these articles would get written up in these different publications, and what happened was that we got to Los Angeles, and on the front page of the entertainment section of the Los Angeles Times, there was a story about us, and it had a picture of me, and it listed me as Papa Molly. Well, the Associated Press picked up the story. Next thing I know, everywhere we went, there was this picture that said Papa Molly on it. my manager took it and ran with it. He started sending it out to publicists and all kinds of stuff. I had very little to do with choosing my nickname, but it chose me. Back then my kids were really little, you know. And as time went on and they grew up to be adults, then the name seemed to fit a lot more than it did back then when I was young.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you've embraced it. I think it's a good stage name, and it seems to suit you.
Yeah, it does. It does suit me now. Like I say, back then it was kind of a joke. It was kind of like everybody, it was kind of the way people kid each other, you know, like friends kid each other, like Big Papa, ho, 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 ho. Now I've got grandchildren and, you know, so it really does kind of fit me now.
I am done with my lunch break now, so I have to go. But is there anything that you would like to say to Grateful Web readers or potential Harvest Festival attendees?
That I am, every day I am humbled and very, very grateful for all my fans and for all the people that I get to play music for, and all the people that I get to play music with. It's been an incredible dream come true, getting to play with some of the musicians I've gotten to play with over the years, and there's not a moment that I don't appreciate and respect my audience. So if I could say anything, that's what I got to say.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for talking with me. It's been really awesome. Really glad to be able to talk to a musician like you.
And I do have a new album that'll be coming out very soon, too. So I'm excited.
Oh, yeah. I meant to ask, what's coming up next? You know, what do you want people to know about what's happening in your life as a musician?
I'll just say this, that very soon, everybody will, you know, everybody that follows me will know about my new record. You know, that's it's already recorded. It will be out by around the first part of the year. And I'm sure that when it does come out, there'll be a lot of hoopla about it. So
awesome.
Just keep following. Stay tuned. You know, follow me on social media, and you'll hear all about it.
All right, great. All right, well, thanks a lot. It was really great talking to you. And
you asked some great questions.
Keep going, sorry. Phones are hard.
I was just going to say, you asked some really interesting questions. A lot of interviewers don't really research, and they end up asking the same questions over and over. But you have some really nice questions.
Oh, well, thank you. Are there any questions that you ever wish that people would ask you that you never get asked?
You know, that's a hard one for me to come up with off the top of my head. Not really. I mean, yeah, we've covered all the bases, it seems like.
Cool. Yeah, I try to come up with questions that aren't just what you can find on the internet all the time. So I'm glad that you like them.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you send me a link or something whenever
the story's done? Oh, yeah, I'll for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
If you're going to use photos or anything, too, I would appreciate you using current photos.
If you can go ahead and email me some, I would like to use those. Maybe like one of, you know, a studio shot or like maybe a performance shot also or something.
Yeah, I'll be happy to.
All right, cool. Thanks a lot.
I'll do that right now.
Okay. Have a wonderful, beautiful day.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.